The Biggest Loser is watched by millions of people every week. But has that show helped or hurt the obesity epidemic? As well, our listeners weigh in on our airline episode with some strong opinions. All this and much, much more today on episode 77 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello and welcome to Fat to Fit Radio. So Russ, the last couple of weeks you had some real momentum with your weight loss. Is it still going?
It is. I am down almost 2 pounds this week, down to 231 and a half. So yeah, I'm real happy about that.
So what's really been helping you out with the last couple of weeks here?
I think it's been really the exercise. I've been doing my workouts and really keeping on that. I've also added that dreaded couch to 5K program back into my schedule. I'm down, you know, number of pounds from when I tried that last time. So I thought it's time to try it again. And so that's really helped a lot too.
Well, that's great to see because I am really looking forward to this 100 pounds and 100 shows. Like, I really am looking forward to being proud of you when we hit this goal.
It's going to be quite a time. I can't wait for that. But let me go through my other goals. Eating goals, 7 out of 10, doing pretty well. Exercise again, 10 out of 10. But my motivation for this week, if you can't tell from my voice here, I've been not feeling too well. And so probably overall just a 5 out of 10. Really feeling like nothing but eating burgers and pizza and feeling bad for myself. But been trying to get past that and get better.
Well, you just got to take it one day at a time and, you know, you're going to make it there. But let's move into our email and comment section. And the first email came in from James.
Yep, James wrote here, "Thank you so much for all you do. I just discovered your podcast a couple of months ago, but I wish I had found it when I was at the beginning of my weight loss journey, a year and a half and 105 pounds ago. Your no-nonsense, sensible, motivational advice is invaluable. Before I get to my question, my basic info is as follows. I'm a 30-year-old male living in Tucson, Arizona, and I stand 5'10". At my heaviest, I was 262 pounds. Now I am 157 pounds and have 13.5% body fat. Nice. My question is about excess skin around my middle, which I know might be a bit gross for some listeners, but it's an occupational hazard. I've gotten myself to a great fitness level. I have the weight I want, have energy that I have never thought I would, and have the ability to do all the active things I was completely unable to do before when I was at my heaviest. That said, I would really like to be able to actually take my shirt off at the pool or the beach and not be ashamed of my middle. Regardless of the amount of weight loss and strength training I do, I still seem to have this loose, unsightly bunch of skin that hangs around my middle. My doctor has said that it is, in fact, skin and simply not fat. He has suggested cosmetic surgery to remove it."
And he continues, "I've always been the kind of guy that hasn't liked plastic surgery, so I'm wondering if this skin will eventually just shrink or go away on its own if I continue my regular diet and exercise regime. I know that it's impossible to target fat loss on any specific area of one's body, but is there anything that I can do to help the process along? Or is surgery my only option for getting rid of this ugly pouch? At the end of the day, I love the body I have worked to achieve, and I'm a much happier person overall than when I was much larger. But getting rid of the skin would be the icing on the cake. And I think that's just a great attitude personally. Any insight you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Once again, thanks for the podcast. You guys are the greatest."
All right, so there's a few factors here that you want to think about when you're losing weight and have that maybe a little bit extra skin. First is, how long have you been overweight? Has that skin been stretched out for a long period of time? And secondly, how large were you? You know, there's a certain point that skin can stretch, and then you start getting things like stretch marks. The skin gets stretched past its that tensile strength point, and it just loses its ability to the elasticness of the skin, and it won't come back. And third is your age. You know, as you get older, we lose some of the collagen in the skin, and just by natural aging process, your skin is not as elastic. And the fourth is genetics. You know, some people, no matter how large they get, they don't get stretch marks. Their skin is just a little bit different. Those people are going to have their skin, if they get larger and then lose that weight, their skin's not going to have any problems. It's going to retract back. Some, no matter how much weight you gain or lose, you're going to have some extra skin at some point.
And the fifth factor that a lot of people don't think about when talking about their skin is your nutrition. Skin is technically just your largest organ, and if you eat healthy, that improves the health of all of your organs. People think that special creams or lotions or oils that claim they can tighten skin or get rid of stretch marks or scars can help, but their effects in reality are really minimal. It's true that moist skin is better than dry skin, and many people use moisturizers, but this may surprise many people, but there's many studies now out that show that drinking more water improves the hydration of your skin much more than using moisturizers. The moisturizers just mainly affect the outer layer of the skin, whereas drinking lots of water hydrates from the inside out. So nutrition, what you eat and drink, can help with your skin. But some other factors here, skin does tighten up over time. But depending on all of those factors that we've listed, it may never go back all of the way. And that's just a fact for some people. I personally have some skin on my butt and thighs that if I sit or stand a certain way, you can see it puckering up and looking saggy. And I'm only 40 or 50 pounds lighter than what I used to average. You've got double the weight that I've lost. It has tightened up over the last couple of years, but it just may never be 100%. You know, I was heavy for many, many years. The point here is that skin will tighten up over time, but there are limits to how much it can and how fast it can recover. This might seem obvious, but if you lose weight very fast, you'll most likely get noticeable hanging and loose skin. If you lose weight gradually, like we suggest, your skin might be able to keep up with your shrinking size or at least have a better chance. But genetics is a huge factor. If you look at one woman 1 week after childbirth, a very small percentage of them will look 100% back to normal. 6 months later, a larger percentage of women will be back to normal, but there will always be some women whose skin never fully snaps back to where it was before the pregnancy. And Russ, your wife had this problem, right?
That's right. A couple of years after we had our last child, my wife Laura had a abdominoplasty, a tummy tuck. And after our twins were born, her stomach was very stretched out. I mean, she had 14 and a half pounds of baby in there. So there was almost no way that that was going to go back by itself. So yeah, she had the tummy tuck and has been very happy about it. She has a scar right now. It's kind of a little bit below the belly. And, you know, she's got to hide that. She's not wearing a low-cut bikini or anything like that. But overall, she's much happier. So, James, you know, think about surgery. I mean, but, you know, give it some time. You know, you've spent a long time getting this body, and I'd hate to mark it up with some scars. But if it comes to that and it's going to make you happier, I'd say go for it. You know, you've worked hard and you want to have that great, you know, stomach, and you deserve it if over time it doesn't come back.
Yeah, so the bottom line is the skin may or may not go away. You do risk, though, if you have surgery, of having these large scars from it. But in reality, it's much easier to hide loose skin than bulging fat. You can hide that under clothes much easier. And at the very end of the day, if you have a little bit of hanging skin or it's a little loose, you know, that is something to be proud with, because this is where you used to be. It's a reminder of where you used to be.
All right, we're going to get on to our second question, and we're going to take a look at some things from the Fat to Fit Support website.
That's right. At the Fat to Fit Support website, which is free for everyone, we now have over 500 members there, and people post questions and leave responses. And we're just going to give a sample of a fairly basic question that a couple people responded to.
All right, the topic here from Ed was, how do I figure out the calories for the food that I make myself? This question might be relatively simple. I found a great recipe for peanut sauce that I love to dip my vegetables in. I'm certain that it is better for me than the store-bought stuff. However, I don't know how many calories are in the homemade version. Why don't more recipes include that information? To find the recipe count for the recipes, is it simply the sum of all the parts? This is a sauce, so I am eating all of it and not a marinade where it gets largely thrown out, I think.
Now, John responded, I tend to overcomplicate things, but I would sum it all up and then do the math for what part of it you eat. I guess you would need an overall size to work with, for example, 4 cups. It won't be exact, but neither are the nutritional labels. You'll get a good ballpark number, though.
And Scott also responded, what I typically do, especially if I know the food I make is better or lower calorie than the store-bought stuff, is use the store-bought product label as my baseline estimate. That way, while I may be overestimating my calories, if I am off, there will be a negative calorie deficit, which is always good.
And Terry also responded, I list the calories of each ingredient by weight now that I have a scale, but by measure before, and total them. Then I measure out how many servings are in the final product and divide the total calories by the number of servings I ended up with to get the number of calories in each serving. Since I try to cook for many meals at once, this works very well. It's actually pretty easy if you have a reference for the calories. There's a couple of online calorie content and foods websites, including one by the USDA. I'll have to see if there are any links already posted.
All right, we have another response here from Genevieve, and she wrote, I have an iPhone and use a program called Food IQ, which also lets you set up recipes and add them without having to go through adding all the ingredients each time. It's even great for things which I do measure exactly, like oatmeal with raisins and flax seeds. Make it a recipe and add all three items once every day.
And then Michelle responded, a foodie blog I read recommended the Spark Recipes online calorie calculator. You enter in all the ingredients with quantities, as well as the number of servings in the recipe, and out pops the calories per serving. I can't vouch for the accuracy, but it is certainly easy to use. And we'll leave a link in the show notes for that link to Spark People. And this just shows that with a community of people, they come up with good ideas, and then someone gets a really good one at the very end. And that's where the post ended.
Yeah, we just wanted to highlight a few of these responses because this is just a great community. Jeff and I are on this forum as well, but mostly it's listeners answering other listeners' questions. And it's just great to just read it and just revel in all the wonderful information and advice that everybody's giving each other.
All right, well, let's move on to our third item. And we received a lot of feedback through email and comments on the website about show number 75. This is the show where we had a guest on who was 370 pounds and was right on the edge where he was going to be forced to buy two plane tickets in order to fly simply because of his size. What is surprising is that 99% of our listeners probably need to lose a few pounds, but there was not one single comment that was compassionate or supportive of the situation that our guest was in. Here are some samples of what our listeners think.
Yes, listener Sue said it simply, as a person of small stature who has recently lost 60 pounds, I've experienced larger people sitting next to me and spilling over into my space. I have to say that I resent the idea that as a smaller person, I'm obligated to give up part of my seat to a larger person. I don't agree with the Tetris seating plan. Overall, I was not sympathetic to Steve. Sorry.
Andrew also had a lot to say, but here's just a little bit of what he wrote. Let me preface this by saying I love your podcast and I've been listening forever. I was around 310 pounds, and now I'm about 240 and on my way to my goal of 215. This certainly is due in part to your podcast. I can't believe your opinions on this flying issue. If you are 5'10", 370, you need to buy an extra ticket. How the heck does the logic of, I'm fat, and if you sit next to me, it was your choice work? Because the person was late to the plane, they should be penalized? They didn't pay the sit next to a fat person price. And you have never once mentioned when you were feeling sorry for him that this is all his fault. He has to be eating something like 4,000 calories to maintain that size. Take responsibility for stuffing your own face. That's what I did.
Yeah, Andrew continued here. And by the way, I had the same opinions when I was 310 pounds. When I would travel, it would be with at least another person, and I would make sure that I got the aisle or the window, and the person I was traveling with was in the middle. And you could argue that this guy is traveling alone, that's fine. It just means he needs to buy another ticket. My point is because you got so fat you can't fit in a seat doesn't mean the airline should fix that problem. It means you should fix that problem. Take some responsibility for your own actions. It seems like this entire country doesn't want to do that.
And another listener, Tim, had quite a lengthy response. And in part, he said, I have a non-biased, 100% consistent analytical way to approach the travelers of size issue. Prior to boarding, have all passengers walk through a doorway that is the same width of the airline seats. If they can't easily fit through the doorway, then they have to pay for two seats. The airlines have measuring devices for carry-on luggage, so they should apply the same logic here. For some background, I am a 30-year-old IT professional who travels quite frequently for work. I lost 50 pounds over a year and a half period and have spent the past 2 years maintaining my body weight and shape. In closing, it is all about taking personal responsibility. Bottom line is, if the obese have to pay more for certain things because they're obese, they will work not to be obese.
So I think Andrew's response was very interesting that, you know, that we didn't take Steve to task on his being overweight. And I think that when I asked him, you know, is this motivating you to lose weight? That was kind of my response is, you're obviously overweight. You obviously need to lose weight. And is this a catalyst for making that happen? You know, Steve said, yes, he did. But there was a little bit of a little bit of denial about why he was overweight. And I think that 4,000 calorie comment, it was valid. I'm going to guess that's Andrew's done the numbers, and 4,000 calories sounds about right to maintain 370 pounds.
The thing why we chose these three responses about this topic was because all three people have lost weight and have been in situations where they're heavier, and they took responsibility and are really upset that other people are saying, oh, I'm just large, so I should be treated differently. And that's why we chose these responses. We didn't choose responses from people who've always been thinner and smaller and just complaining about large people. So we wanted people who had experience like this or similar and really have gone through it and are just telling other people, you know, you've got to get this weight off.
Yes, we appreciate everybody's opinion on that, especially those who we mentioned here, James, Ed, Scott, John, Terry, Genevieve, Michelle, Sue, Andrew, and Tim. Thank you all for your email and your comments. If anybody else would like to get a hold of us or send us a question or comment, there's a few ways to do it. First, comment on the website at fattofitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
That third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now we've gone a little long on our email and comment section this week, so we're going to go ahead and skip the web report and head right on into our feature section for this week.
In today's feature section, we are talking about The Biggest Loser television show. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of details about the show because most people have seen or at least heard about the show. To put it simply, it's a weight loss challenge. People compete to lose the most amount of weight for a cash prize. Each week, the people who lose the least amount of weight can be eliminated and kicked off the show. I did watch the first season of it in its entirety, and I've watched bits and pieces of it since then if I happen to see it on while I'm channel surfing, so I am pretty familiar with it. Now, I did a little research, and the show started in 2004, and since then, it has become a massive franchise. It isn't just a show anymore. They have now branched out into DVDs, books, video games, and even have their own brand of protein powder. Most people probably don't realize this, but there is much more than the American version with the trainers Jillian Michaels and Bob Harper. There are actually 25 different versions in production right now all around the world. These versions can be seen in 90 different countries as well. I've seen the Australian and American versions, and it was very strange to see them and to be able to look and compare them. They're almost exactly the same. The sets look pretty much identical, the people and the trainers are different, and things are in kilograms instead of pounds, but each show's script of what happens during each episode is pretty much identical. And it is quite strange how even the contestants' individual life stories and challenges that makes them seem just like real people to us are the same. Those people are definitely chosen very carefully so that the pre-planned storylines will hopefully work out in each market. Now, this is reality TV, but make no mistake, they use a formula for each show and every show that will produce a very similar show in all 25 markets. Mark Burnett, who is responsible for creating many of the most popular reality TV shows right now, doesn't call it reality TV. He has referred to it as scripted reality. So think about that. Now, the purpose of this section is to give a review of the show and give our opinions of it. We know that we have thousands of our listeners who watch The Biggest Loser on a regular basis. We get emails all the time from people who mention The Biggest Loser. What I want to do is cut through the hype and give people a taste of the reality of that show. Now, on the last Fat to Fit show, I mentioned that for people to be successful in permanent weight loss, they should do everything opposite of what they do on The Biggest Loser. I said not to get caught up in focusing on losing big numbers every week, working out 4 to 7 hours per day, and pushing yourself past what is medically safe for you, and I concluded that if you did 5% of the effort that they do on that show, you can easily have lifelong weight loss success and fitness. I'm not here to simply bash The Biggest Loser. It definitely has some benefits for some people. We hear from people that tell us all the time that it gives them motivation. I know of two people who have told us that they listen to our show and listen to audio versions of The Biggest Loser while they work out. On the surface, it seems that it would be very counterintuitive, you know, to listen to two programs one after the other that provide such opposite advice, but not if you only take out the good things. So, to be fair, I'm going to start by listing the good things about The Biggest Loser that I find really good. And number one, it's very entertaining. The editing of the show paints a compelling storyline in every episode. The people are interesting and real, and it makes you want to watch week after week to see how they do. It is truly an emotional show, and that is the key for successful programs like this. Number two, they do have tidbits of information on nutrition and exercise that are truly helpful. Over time, people do learn tips and tricks about nutrition and exercise. I saw part of a show last week where the challenge was to identify which of the three dishes had the fewest calories. Just by listening to the questions that the contestants were asking about how the food was prepared and the specific types of foods that they were made from, you can clearly pick up some food tips. Number three, and this is probably the biggest one, it is really motivational for many, many people. People see that it is never too late to make a huge change in their life by losing weight and getting fit. It truly inspires people to make changes in their lives, and that is a good thing. And number four, this is really a positive for me about the show. They acknowledge that weight loss is all about calories in versus calories out. They eat lower calories to get in a caloric deficit, and then they do exercise to increase that caloric deficit to increase their weight loss. Weight loss is all about hard work by watching what you are eating and exercising. They never get hung up on the latest supplement or type of berry or the type of extract that's supposed to help you lose weight. They do it by eating less and exercising more. So these are the things that we truly hope people will take away from the show, but of course I have some concerns. So I gave four benefits and I'll give you four concerns. Number one, fitness professionals and trainers are against the show for a variety of reasons. I'm going to link to an article in the show notes from IDEA, which is one of the largest organizations for fitness and wellness professionals. In this article, they talk about their main areas of concern, and it is quite a lengthy article, but it is very good if you're interested in reading the whole thing. This organization simply doesn't want its trainers who are certified through them to be attempting what they see on the show. For example, it's clearly irresponsible for any trainer to make people attempt really intensive activity on the very first day, such as running a 1 mile race against other people. There's simply no progression of getting easier to harder training. People who are hundreds of pounds overweight with obviously very poor cardiovascular fitness are thrown right into high intensity programs, which clearly puts them at risk for serious injury or even death. So that's the first negative point, but the second one is very serious as well. Number two, this is a weight loss competition. It doesn't matter if you lose fat, muscle, water, or even bone. The goal is not to lose fat. You would be penalized if you only lost fat and gained a little muscle. Let me put this another way. If you lose weight the healthy way, you will lose on this show. If you only lose fat and keep all of your muscle to keep your metabolism going strong, you are considered a failure here. And here is a famous quote from season one winner Ryan Benson. And he said this on his MySpace blog. And he said, "I wanted to win so bad that the last 10 days before the final weigh-in, I didn't eat one piece of solid food. If you've heard of the Master Cleanse, that's what I did. It's basically drinking lemonade made with water, lemon juice, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper. The rules of the show said we couldn't use any weight loss drugs. Well, I didn't take any drugs. I just starved myself. 24 hours before the final weigh-in, I stopped putting anything in my body, liquid or solid. Then I started using some old high school wrestling tricks. I wore a rubber suit while jogging on the treadmill, and then I spent a lot of time in the steam room. In the final 24 hours, I probably dropped 10 to 13 pounds in just pure water weight. By the time of the final weigh-in, I was peeing blood." I'll say that again. By the time of the final weigh-in, I was peeing blood. In the 5 days after the show was over, I gained about 32 pounds. Not from eating, just from getting my system back to normal, mostly rehydrating myself. So in 5 days, I was back up to 240 pounds. Just crazy. And if you think that's just an isolated contestant just doing some crazy stuff, here's another quote off another MySpace blog, and this is from Kai Hibbard from season 3, and she tells us about her final weigh-in on the show. And she said, I dehydrated off 19 pounds in the last 2 weeks before the big weigh-in. I stopped eating solid food after only eating protein and asparagus. Then I had 2 colonics and spent the night before the weigh-in in and out of the sauna. There really was no diet the day of the weigh-in. We weighed in as dehydrated as possible on empty stomachs after 2-hour workouts in the morning. And as with Benson, Hibbard's final week weight came flying back. I actually put on about 31 pounds in 2 weeks. After my body had a chance to stabilize, I spent all of last year hovering between 159 and 175 pounds. I now fight every day to find some stability with my weight. I don't think that I really need to comment on that. Does anyone actually think that this is permanent weight loss and a lifestyle change? These are the people who are the most successful and role models for millions of people. Now, the third negative thing that I have to say about The Biggest Loser is that it is not at all possible in the real world to train like they do. What the contestants do is clearly overtraining. Working out between 4 to 7 hours per day does burn calories, but they are clearly on the fragile edge of injury. There is another article that I'm going to link to that talks about the realities of The Biggest Loser. And what is interesting is actually the comments after the article. And here is the very first comment from this article. And I'll just read here. I injured myself because I tried to exercise hardcore, the way Jillian and Bob push the contestants. I thought this was the way to lose weight because the people on the show do so well with being pushed to their physical limits. But instead of losing the 30 pounds I needed to lose, I tore a tendon in my foot from jogging at my maximum speed on the treadmill while watching The Biggest Loser. I've been in agony for months now and may have to have surgery on my foot. This show should make it clear that people at home should not push themselves like the contestants are pushed because it is very easy to get injured, especially when you're not used to exercising. I really regret following this show's example for weight loss. And this is obviously not an isolated incident. Personally, if tomorrow I started exercising 4 to 7 hours per day, I would most likely be injured within a week. I know I've got a bit of a knee problem, I know I've got some ankle problems, and this is clearly even too much for me, and I am in shape. Now, the fourth and last problem that I have with the show is that the weight loss goals are totally unrealistic for people to achieve. People have regularly lost 20 pounds in a week, and people have been considered failures and voted off of the show for only losing 8 pounds in a week. Nobody can live up to those expectations. We all don't have millions of people watching us on TV and personal trainers and masseuses and medical help and nutritionists, etc. at our beck and call. We all have real lives and perhaps care about our long-term health. How many people in the real world have given up on any weight loss because they've worked their butts off for a whole week and only lost 3 pounds? If they have to work out 4 or 5 times harder to live up to those elevated expectations, why should they even bother? And I'm sure most people quit after a week or two. And think of it this way. People who are used to watching The Biggest Loser and expecting those results will have very different views of Russ's weight loss. He's lost around 65 pounds in the last 2 years. If you look at his pictures on our website, there's a huge difference in his appearance. I can guarantee that if he lost all 65 pounds in the first 2 months, that all of his weight plus more would be back 2 years later. We have said this here over and over. Every major weight loss study has shown that the faster you lose weight, the quicker that it comes back. It is truly easy to lose a little bit of weight. It isn't that hard to lose the very first 5 pounds on any diet. Every single diet out there will work for those 5 pounds as long as there is a caloric deficit. Real weight loss is all about keeping it off. So those are my big concerns. I have a lot of other things that I can nitpick, but I wanted to leave the number of positives and negatives equal. The bottom line about the show is that it's entertainment. The goal of any show is to make money for its network. It certainly does it through the cost of the commercials that air during it and all of the products that are promoted right on the show itself, not to mention all of the related Biggest Loser products. I think that the listeners of Fat to Fit Radio know this and can separate the hype from reality and enjoy it for what it is. But I have been thinking for the past couple of weeks about whether The Biggest Loser has helped or hurt people's waistlines as a whole over the last couple years. It has given inspiration to millions of people and taught lots of decent things about nutrition and exercise. I'm sure that millions of people watched the show, started to emulate those contestants by eating less and working out very hard, and I'm sure that millions of people lost maybe 5 or 10 pounds in the first 2 months. But what I am also sure of is that almost every single person who lost those 5 or 10 pounds by radically changing their eating and exercise habits will have gained all of that weight back. I'm sure that many of the people have even done this 5 or 6 times and start with the start of each season of The Biggest Loser. A year or two after watching The Biggest Loser, people will remember the weigh-ins and all of the intense training that they saw, and this will be what they think they have to do to become healthy in the future. So I don't think that as a whole, The Biggest Loser has helped the obesity epidemic. It's clear to me that even though this show has the biggest reach of any show related to weight loss or weight loss advice, the rates of obesity have continued to climb. As well, if people do follow what they hear and see on that show, they will be set up for failure in the medium and long term. And what it really reminds me of is the show Dancing with the Stars. The public interest in dancing has skyrocketed, but what percentage of viewers can now dance like them? It's the same thing here. People love to watch weight loss shows and see people lose weight, but it's just not happening to the general public. And I'm going to end off with part of an email that came in from Trevor a little while ago. And this is a nice summary. He wrote, "I've been listening to you for a couple of seasons now, but things really clicked during episode number 70 with Rocky's moving story. I definitely don't want to get diabetes, and his story provided a good scare. Now, since that show, I've got to be honest. I really haven't been trying that hard to lose weight this time. In the past, I've dieted and worked out like crazy to try and become a healthy person. This time, I'm just being a healthy person. Just being healthy. No more diet and crazy workouts. I'm just eating and exercising like the thin person I eventually hoped to become. Surprise, I'm actually losing the weight. And this really is, in a nutshell, what our philosophy is and what is different between us and The Biggest Loser."
Yeah, it's a very good review, Jeff. I can't help but think that people who watch The Biggest Loser and might think it's a sort of a magic pill, even, that some magic fairy named Jillian Michaels is going to come in, remove them from their home situation, lop this weight off them in a short period of time. And that's not happening for anybody except for those contestants. They're really overworked and they're not going to be able to sustain their weight loss. I think that people are looking at this as like, hey, this is what I need to do. Like, this is a magic bullet that's going to remove the weight from their bodies. And that's just not realistic.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad situation that people really be all hyped up and get started and then just give up after a couple weeks because it's just so hard. And like I've said in the past, losing weight is not all about doing it really hard and struggling. It's just about doing it a little bit smarter.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, Russ. Well, since we're talking about losing weight throughout the show, I see you have a recipe that looks like dessert again.
Ah, yes. Well, you know, I checked out the link to the Spark People calorie calculator, and I had this great recipe for a low-calorie pumpkin pie, so I combined the two. So we'll have two links in the show notes, one for the original recipe, and then one for the Spark People recipe that I created, so I could figure out it was 112 calories per serving. So check it out, this low-calorie pumpkin pie recipe. It looks really good, and I'm going to create this one myself. It uses a vanilla pudding as part of the recipe, which sounds very interesting to me.
Yeah, it does look interesting. Cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, vanilla pudding, skim milk, cooked pumpkin. Looks pretty good.
All right, I'll tell you how it goes here in the next couple of weeks after I make it. But Jeff, what is our homework for this week?
Well, we always talk about setting goals and writing them down, but many people get caught up in always looking forward and just setting goals for the future. The homework this week is to start writing down all of your successes. Do it just like you do your goals, but do it in the reverse. What are some things that you've accomplished in the last year that you are proud of with your fitness and weight loss goals? What are some things in the last 3 months or the last week or even today that has led to you having some more success? Keeping track of your successes can be another way to keep yourself motivated and help with that good old momentum.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. Looking back on those successes. Good. So, Jeff, what's our quote for this week?
This week's quote comes from Jim Sorensen. He said, "A vision without action is called a daydream. But then again, action without vision is called a nightmare."
All right. Very good. Thank everybody again for participating in the show, for those emails and those comments. Keep them coming in. We love them. All the show notes will be over at the website, fattofitradio.com. Check them out there, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.